One aspect of practicing is that in following the Dharma is that we're learning to understand what's going on in reality and that it's okay what's going on. Often we have this, we're so filled with opinionations of how things should be that we're often rejecting a lot of things and thus not at peace, not content. And naturally there's always things that aren't going well, but there's always things that aren't going well. And it's the understanding of karma that there are things. Just like you can lie, look, I'll hear about like all the refugees in the world, and it's pretty depressing how many how many of these spots with refugees are going on, and these poor people, what's happening to them and all the rest. And then I just look at it with historical, they didn't used to be refugee crises. Why was that? No one cared. You know, basically, there wasn't refugee crises because no one paid attention to refugees. When things were bad, it was just tough. People, that's their business. So it's like the same thing as some things in this school. We go like how bad we're treating people now. And, you know, like certain ethnic groups and all the rest. I remember hearing in the 1930s what they did in a lot of the Southwest and parts of the West is they just took Mexicans who were born in America and kicked them out of the country. Just threw them across the border, and that was that. They were stuck and done. And you kind of go, how could they do? Well, people act on, in the same way as we locked up all the Japanese, you know, when it was convenient to do it. Like in California, we locked up. In Hawaii, where there was too many of them, we just let them be. So there wasn't even a logic to it. Hawaii's a, that's closer to Japan.
And it's where the bombings were.
Yeah, it's where Pearl Harbor was. But we didn't do it in Japan. You know, in Hawaii, we did it in California. I'm just saying it's often we lose perspective and we actually don't understand how difficult the human condition is. Just like when we're judgmental on people, often we're not understanding how difficult it is being human, getting through life, doing stuff, and how much difficulty a lot of people are having with it. But we learn, just like in most people's lives, they learn something. You know, you've all learned something. I guarantee you, if I talked to a 17-year-old version of you, you would be kind of like thinking, oh my God.
What do you mean? I was perfect at 17. I've been a deep climb ever since.
Not only that, you knew everything at 17. Life was really simple at 17. It's even why I can remember the political discussions, you know, you'd have in college. And everybody's kind of lost in this simplistic world with simple answers and simple solutions to things because we want an answer. It's like we want things simple. And part of life is just learning to appreciate its complexity and actually understanding karma, even if you don't call it karma, the way things are working themselves out, the way it's going. And, you know, and you can appreciate that from a deeper sense in your heart that it's okay what's going on. It's even okay when people are suffering or making mistakes or blowing it. You know, it's like if I deal with somebody suicide, you know, it's like, okay, that wasn't bad. Not a good thing to do. But on the other hand, that's the nature of things. And we can understand why people do it. They don't want to put up with conditions. And they lose sight of the fact that, God, they're going to change so, you know, that there's nothing really going on here. But people need a chance to learn. And the process, you know, of training is actually learning to let go of the negativity. And it's not a false positivity like, wow, everything's wonderful or great or everything's working out in a, this simplistic way. Because it's not, you know. Just like people will go, an example of just an idiotic teaching that I've often heard repeated is, you never given more than you can handle. You know, God. And I thought, what? You know what I mean? Like, of course that's complete nonsense. People are often completely traumatized by what happens to them. People are frequently given more than they can handle. Some people never recover from... I remember listening to somebody who was just trying to deal with some... I think it was maybe Cambodian women who had lost everything. And just... you know, trying to find ways to bring them back to life, and actually got it by them doing like massaging feet and doing nails and just learning to be human again because they were so traumatized by what had happened to them. Just interacting with bodies and doing stuff helped them to kind of come back to, okay, I can do this. But, you know, but on the other hand, that's also the way karma works. People don't get, you know, and it's, that's the very nature of karma, that sometimes you're going to be overwhelmed by stuff, and that's what you're looking, in fact, when people are doing awful things, that's what's going on, is they're not being traumatized, but maybe coming from another trauma, and they're being overwhelmed by something, just like, I'll deal with somebody and I realize they're just being overwhelmed by karma at the moment. You know, they just can't handle it. They're, you know, that's why they're so emotional and you really can't talk to them because they're being overwhelmed by what's their feelings and thoughts. And that's how we learn, is we learn from all these things, and we learn to trust that it's okay, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. It's even okay to blow it, and, you know, from a Buddhist point of view, when you commit to do something wrong, nothing is being fundamentally lost or at birth being gained, so it's not like, wow, this is a tragedy in the deepest sense. But on the other hand, we're trying to prevent them. You know, of course, we're trying to prevent as much suffering as possible. It's one of the main aspects of training. And the more we can actually let go of the negativity and the criticism in our own lives, the more the world will reflect that. And the more we can see good and can actually see how a lot of things are actually working out. You know, because when you look at the negative things, it's like, how could this suffering be there? Without looking at all the ways it isn't being there. You know, it's like my recent way of looking at it, like we just don't get enough news about Switzerland. You know, it's like...
there are new geraniums in the window boxes this February.
Yeah, you know, it's like... it's like reading the Albany Crime Report, I remember, where one weekly report had mysterious substance in people's locks. Somebody had stuck glue in some locks. This even makes it to the police, is a major. You know, because when I looked at looking at the Albany crime list for the week, I thought, I've lived in places where not a single one of these things would have been reported, because the police would go, it's like a stolen bicycle. Why are you reporting a stolen bicycle? You know, unlike Albany, where I remember when we got robbed and they took fingerprints. So I go, you're kidding. You know, it's like this was a little robbery. You know, it's like you're really taking fingerprints. But Albany doesn't have a lot of crime, so they can afford to.
One of my favorites is reading the Piedmont Police blotter one time. Piedmont doesn't have a lot of crime, and they said neighbors report suspicious people lurking in backyards, and the police went out, and it was the garden club. They're
actually, the extreme example of that with the police is Kensington, this tiny little township of only like 6,000 people. You know what I mean? Even for the Bay Area, it's really small. And for some reason, at some point, they passed an extra fee to have more police. So despite it's really no crime, they have a lot of police. So literally, you can get the police to come into your house and water your plants when you come. They say the police get more gifts at Christmas time because they're just willing to do things for people. And they realize, I remember reading this great article about it, that what works best is for them to get, they can't get young, keen men to be, you know, because it's like nothing happens. What they realize works best is burnt out Oakland cops, who the idea of having a job with virtually no danger or crime is a great way, you know, like the idea that I'm on the night shift and nothing ever happens, which is logic. What they had is very satisfying. But again, you don't hear, you know, it's a type of thing you don't hear, just, you know, there's not going to be, you know, you can imagine the TV show. The gritty inner life of the Kensington police. Because the reporter who did the story, something happened that night and they had to do something. It was nothing. Nothing significant, and the guy said, "This is a good night. We had something to do."
I live in Alameda at a senior center, a senior housing with my mom. It's gated. It's extremely safe. And I went to pick up a monk at the airport in the middle of the night. I come home at 4 in the morning. And the security guard and I startle each other. I get up the elevator and I'm not expecting to see anybody. We're like, ah! And he said, I said, "You scared me." He said, "You scared me." We weren't expecting to see each other. And I'm like, why do we have a security guard? This is like the safest place in the world and it's a lot of money. And, well, they got rid of him, thank goodness. But, because we clearly don't need him. But, Very safe.
But anyway, but a lot of it is, a lot of the ways we let go of criticism of the world is letting go of criticism of ourselves. Because the two go together. You know, if you're at peace with who you are, you can actually see it in the world around you. Just like you go into situations, and if you're not demanding, requiring, you can actually see the good that's there. Well, all you have to do is see when you're in a bad mood how many things can annoy you and how easy it is to be upset with, you know, kind of with others and with the world, and just like people who are always upset with, you know, kind of the world, you know, it's like... and part of that is by training where you're not doing the things that are causing you to be critical of yourself, because the reason... There's two aspects of learning to let go of self-criticism. One is to stop criticizing yourself, but that's virtually impossible to do if you keep having the wrong intention and purposely doing the wrong things. You know, you can say, "Wow, I shouldn't be upset with myself," and then purposely make a mess of it. It's almost like somebody who is you know, just not taking care of something and it's causing a lot of karmic consequence. Well, it's hard not to kind of, I should be doing this and I'm not doing it. And the natural karma is to be critical of yourself. And although you can work at reducing the criticism, to some extent it's coming up for a good reason, the same way as if somebody gets angry with me, let's say, I'll make it simpler, unjustifiably angry with me. Naturally, the thought comes, they shouldn't be doing that. You know, the critical thought will arise, but I can then work at letting go of it. You know, but On the other hand, if I'm getting unjustifiably angry with someone else, the critical thought will arise in me. And probably I should look at it some, you know what I mean? It's not like I should just dismiss it. Oh, criticism. I have to let go of self-criticism. Because it's also pointing out, that's useful information. I'm blowing it. Mm-hmm. I should really figure out what's going on here. Why am I getting upset? You know, and how do I change that so I'm not making that mistake? And, you know, and if we're willing to look at things in the right way, then we can get one of those qualities that the Buddha really emphasized, which is contentment. Mm-hmm. What's preventing us from being content? And a sense of actually joy and pleasure in the things we're doing, because when we're not having that criticism, that critical mind, you know, a lot of things in life are, you know, you realize you can take this pleasure in a lot of these, in all sorts of things. I mean, hell, a lot of you just had a cookie. Mm-hmm. Good karma. You know, cup of tea, you know, a nice breakfast this morning, company here, you know, all these things. You know, it's because a lot of the negativity in life comes out of the way we're self-centered, you know, and then. And life keeps not giving us what we want, which is what the self-centered... When you're really self-centered, you'll always find things that aren't right. Because it's never like everything's going your own way. It never does. It's why you can be amazingly successful and amazingly unhappy. Because even though you have success, you can always have more success. You know, you could always have more of whatever it is. Because it's like, when do you have enough? You know, it's of something. And, you know, but, you know, and wisdom can arise when you're not being that self-centered. You know, when you're just content with what's there. Then you can kind of clearly see what's going on. Just like with others, when you don't have demands of them, it's much easier to see what's going on with them. When you have a lot of demands of how you want things, it colors everything. It's like somebody was being critical. I remember was describing being critical of someone, and it's like, I don't understand why they're doing this or they're doing that, and I kind of go, why are you trying to understand that they're doing this or they're doing that? You know, you don't... The idea that you have to understand why somebody is the way that they are is nonsensical. All you have to do is just accept this is what's going on and it's okay. Sometimes you'll understand it, but sometimes you don't. And truthfully, some things aren't, there's nothing to understand. They just like this. You know, it's like I'll do something and somebody will, I don't understand why you're doing it. I like it. You know, it's like there's not, it's like there's no deep, like somebody they want like a teaching when it's, there isn't a teaching. I just like it this way. And it's like, you know, and it's like they want an answer because they don't like it this way. Yeah?
Is being self-centered, we all start out that way as a child, is that how we end up feeling inadequate?
Well, the inadequacy comes out of, without being self-centered, there's no inadequacy, you know, because the inadequacy comes out of how we're viewing ourselves and comparing ourselves with others, you know, because the inadequacy isn't in and of itself. It actually always requires a comparative mind in which it's important how we're doing in comparison to others. I mean, there's always a, on a practical level, there's always a comparison mind in that we have to pick up the differences and, you know, I can notice other people are better than me at some stuff, and it doesn't bother, you know, it doesn't matter to me. You know, I don't care that I'm not as good as, you know, like somebody gets on my computer and, ooh, I can't do that. It's not like I kind of go, Kinray, you should be able to do that. I don't really, you know, it doesn't, it's not like something I'm attached to how good you are on a computer. computer. But, you know, on, well, on some things probably I would, you know, I might care, and the self is sort of attached to something. So, and the inadequacy comes, yeah, usually it's out of a comparative mind. You can't be inadequate unless you're comparing yourself to something else, even though it can be often unrealistic in that you feel inadequate, and then when you look at it, everyone else, you're critical of them too, so you make them all inadequate too, but it's still, you know, the whole world is a mess type of frame of mind. Everyone is doing poorly, and that's even a way of escaping karma. Everyone is selfish and bad, and which is the cynical way you can be cynical with comparative mind and inadequate, and then justify with cynicism, like, oh, everyone's out for number one, everyone is this, everyone is that, no one's doing well. And actually, when you're having trouble, that suddenly becomes what you see. You're having difficulty, and suddenly you see everyone else's difficulty. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think everyone, you know, it's, you know, just like, you know, when I was at Shasta Abbey, if I was having a hard time, I'd look around and it seemed like everyone was having a hard, you know, I would see everyone's difficulties more, like, oh God, you know, and in a way it would, you know, you'd be losing faith in the practice a bit by doing it that way. And then if you're doing better, you suddenly look and everyone seems to be, wow, all these people are, I'm so lucky, so many people are good examples for me. You know, it comes out of that attitude of mind of what you're looking at, just like you can, in a relationship, haven't we all done this in relationships where suddenly everything the other person's doing is annoying, or at other points, wow, we're so lucky. You know, wow, that fault is endearing. you know, the same thing can be, you know, it's almost like, it's almost like I remember reading about, you know, someone who kind of, you know, someone who was going with a much younger woman, and in the beginning he just loved her youthful innocence, and then he got upset with her childishness and, you know, naivete, you know, the same qualities that he was positive about at one point become negative at another point, because naturally the person, you know, was young, so they behaved young. And the more we get ourselves out of the way, the more we can understand the patterns that are working, both in our own lives and in other lives. That there's just patterns of how they're seeing things, patterns, the way their desires work, their fears work, the way they view themselves creates patterns. We all have them, you know. It's why we keep having the same problems. You know, there's a pattern there. You know, you can be with somebody and they never have that problem. They have their own problem. You know, because we keep looking at things with the same, you know, asking for the same things, just like our own inadequacies will often have some continuity. Well, the next person has, they're inadequate, but in different ways. And you actually find freedom by just seeing it, and just seeing it for what it is, just a pattern. It's not you, it's just a pattern. You don't have to identify with it or just see it. And you can learn not to react to it if it's not a good pattern. Some of the patterns are fine. I have patterns that I see and I kind of go, they seem to be working. What the heck? You know, they're not causing, they seem to be good, not bad. So that pattern I don't have to, you know, but just to see it and notice it and go, oh, that's something I usually get right rather than wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, there's some other things I get wrong more than I get right, and then I kind of go, okay, I should really pay attention here, you know, I have a tendency not to do that well. Or I may have a tendency to make this mistake in this situation. And by knowing the pattern, sometimes before something happens, I know a few steps down the road what mistake I'm likely to make. Like I've had situations where somebody criticizes me and I realize I have to leave the room. Anything I say is going to make things worse. I have to learn not to say anything and just let it be, let do something that is uncomfortable. Just let it be there and respond at some point when I can say the right thing. Because I know when I'm feeling this strongly, I can't say the right thing. Even if I say the right thing, the person will pick up what I really mean. And actually, as you train this way, it allows you to kind of accept and be content, even when part of you isn't accepting, and this part of you that's willing to trust and be content, and part of you is upset with this, or angry, or confused, and wishes it would know what's going on. It's almost like when I've had medical things where I don't know what to do or what's wrong. It's worrying, you know, it's like, okay, I don't know what to do. I'd like to know what to do. How much should I be worried? It's like you don't even know how worried is appropriate. Like, is this something I should be worried about? Do I need to deal with this? And with training, you can realize, okay, it's just feeling. It's just thoughts. It's okay. Even if the worst happens, it'll be, you know, I'll deal with it. And not allow it to stop it from filling you and reminding yourself of the Dharma, and try to trust in the midst of that, which is different than you're not pushing it away or saying you still have it. What the hell should I do? Mm-hmm. The question is still there, like often it is in life. Mm-hmm. People often want a simple answer: what should I do? And just like people sometimes ask me, what should they do? And usually I don't tell them. Because it's not like, it's in a way, because honestly, most of the time I wouldn't know enough to know really. You know, because even if something seems better than the other, I don't know enough to really say, you know, it's not my responsibility, and I don't know enough to know all the ins and outs as much as a person would know. Because what's good to do? You know? And that's why, you know, we have to just be aware how easy it is to slip into those subtle criticism. You know, it can be very subtle how we're being critical. And, okay, let me be aware of that. This is just the way I'm subtly poisoning myself, you know, subtly creating negativity, you know, almost like, oh, it's fine what they do, but they really shouldn't be doing it. You know, there's subtle ways we can be critical, and where we think, oh, it's the Dharma, they're the Buddha, but... you know, so it's... And to be sensitive to that, so you can actually see better when you're doing it. Or judgment, or just thinking, I have to have this, or this will make me happy. You're just being aware of those delusions, which if you really listen to, are deluded. You know, not that there's not some validity in the sense, oh, this, you know, just like I was looking at something just to buy something, you know, online, you know, and I'm thinking, yeah, this would be handy, but just to realize, oh, it's not important, and, you know, whether I get it or not doesn't really matter. Not that this whatever, maybe not think that, but it's easy to get caught up in whatever it is. And, you know, and it's like I was reading something where somebody says, you know, it's easy for me to have kindness to a lot of, you know, when in a lot of situations, but when people are acting really childish and opinionated, I find it very hard to get this quality of kindness going to them. And the teacher responded, actually, that's where you really need, that's the Dharma, this is your Dharma lesson. Mm-hmm. That's where you really need to work on it. You can't necessarily get that feeling going, but you can really work hard at what your mind is saying and how you behave. That's up to you. How the feeling goes, that's not up to you. You can't make yourself, oh, it's like saying somebody will complain to me, how do I get to like that person? And I go, I don't know. You can't. You know, that's just karma, if you like or somebody, you know. But you cannot criticize them, and you can treat them well, and remind yourself, you know, and try to see their good qualities, but you can't make yourself like somebody or stop disliking them in the sense you can stop justifying the dislike, but the fact that, God, I have an aversion here would be like, I remember, you know, like people with, you know, an aversion to something. You know, it's just karma that comes up. Just, and sometimes it doesn't. It's like phobias where they don't even make sense. And you can't just say, wow, I shouldn't. Why am I scared here? Why am I afraid in this situation? And sometimes it's so, you know, it can be irrational. Like people I knew who couldn't drive over a bridge. It's like, this makes no sense. I mean, logically, why are you... But of course, you can't control it. The person's not saying, they know logically that there's no danger on the bridge, but it doesn't change the fact that you feel it. And you have to just accept that that's the way it is, and you don't control. You know, just like due to karma, we have some people we just have difficulty with. And you can go, why do I have to? You don't need to know why. You just treat them well. Don't worry about why you... You know, don't just stop yourself from criticizing them. And you can cultivate by trying to see their good qualities. You know, because often that's not what we're doing. And it's just like I remember somebody... But working on having kindness to those we don't feel kindly to, you know, that's actually sort of the crux of the training, because there's no training involved in being liking people we like. Well, the world would be full of a lot of enlightened beings, since most of us are quite willing to like people we like. You know, but... It's how do we deal with the other people? Yeah.
Diana and I both have something.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Thomas. As you're talking, Reverend Master, what's coming up, I'm thinking about Reverend Master Jiu's book, Wild White Goose, you know, her account of her training in Japan, and how she painstakingly went through and annotated those instances where her thinking was definitely not Buddhist thinking and all the rest. And I found that very helpful. I mean, some of them were very, very obvious. Well, yeah, definitely not. But some of them were very subtle.
Oh, yeah.
I found that very helpful.
Yeah, and it's... In fact, I didn't find it as... When I first read it, I remember thinking when I first read The Wild White Goose, well, actually, these people were making mistakes. And I wasn't actually... And she actually, I don't even think in her footnotes made it clear, we're not saying they didn't make the mistake. It's her criticism of them that's the mistake. Her attitude in response to it, rather than compassion and acceptance, it was not, which is understandable. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, being, you know, we naturally have trouble having compassionate acceptance of people's injustice and mistreatment and all the rest. But it's almost like when the Dalai Lama, example I've used before, where the Dalai Lama asked some monks who had been tortured by the Chinese, what were you really worried about when you had to go through, you know, when this was happening? And one of the monks told him, I just was scared I would lose my compassion for the people torturing me. And you think, okay, that's
pretty good.
That's what you call right thought. and that's an impressive example of right thought. You know, that's what we want. Is to, you know, and of course, being human, I'm sure the reason it came up for them is they weren't always, you know, they were getting consumed with anger and hate and all the rest at times. It's naturally would come up. But the fact that they could use it and turn it in the right direction, so at least they weren't filled with hate. You know, because as the Buddha put it, hatred never ceases by hatred. It ceases by love alone. And that's, you know, this is a law, an eternal law. You know, and that's true in all situations. You know, that's what we're working for, towards. And that's what right thought is. And on the other hand, what she remessaged you in the Wild White Goose said is, I have to take everything that happens to me for my own good. That in a way, it's all a teaching for me. And that's a very useful thing. You know, that's a very good principle, because that's, you know, just like a thing, you know, to use that this is my Dharma lesson. I'm having problems here. In fact, that somebody else is having problems. That's not the problem. That's a teaching from me. How do I respond to this? You know, and it's just like I always like a famous thing that I found very helpful in my practice when I was at Shasta Abbey is, St. John of the Cross had a line that I kind of found incredibly helpful. He said, if you do what the abbot tells you to do because you agree with the abbot, that is spiritually useless. You're just following your own opinions. If you do what the abbot tells you to do when you disagree with what he tells you to do, that is spiritually very useful and helpful. And he's not dealing with who's right and who's wrong. It's just the letting go of your opinion. And realizing, in the case like you're in a monastery, well, just to be willing to do what you're asked to do. It's spiritually helpful, even if it's not the right thing to do, if it's not your choice, you know, because a lot of things aren't your choice. Same thing. It's a useful thing when I had jobs to realize at times just to let go of my opinion and just do what I'm asked to do, because that's what my boss wanted me to do. Isn't they didn't really want to hear what I thought about it. You know, it was their choice, their stuff. And I've known people have a real time. I remember somebody who was in the Sangha, and they were really good at their job and very knowledgeable and competent at what they were hired to do. And the people they hired them to do told them explicitly what they wanted done, and she didn't do it because she said it's not the way, you know, it's not the way it should be done. And she may have very well been right, but she had expressed that opinion and they had told her what to do, so she got fired. It was, you know, it was a short term. It wasn't a permanent job, but, you know, it was a contract job. But I remember thinking, they told you what to do. Why didn't you? Mm-hmm. It's their choice. It's their stuff. just do what you're asked to do. You know, you expressed your opinion and they said no. And it's their stuff, so even if it's not the right thing, that's their karma, not yours. And it's hard for us to do that. People often, you know, kind of go, like, I have to get it my way. And that, of course, distorts things. And also, our opinions can be wrong, too. I've been, you know, it's sobering when you realize, oh, they were right. Actually, somebody may know more than I do on something. Shockingly. With my opinionated mind, of course, usually we assume. And often our opinionated minds. And one thing always to keep in mind is how much we simplify reality to have an opinion. Just like you know why people are doing something. When I don't even know why I'm doing something. You know what I mean? It's like, is our motivation ever that, you know, somebody will tell me why I'm doing something and I'm going to, first of all, how do you know why I'm doing something? And if I think about it, I'm not even sure why. You know what I mean? It's not like I, do we always know why we're making a choice or something? And, you know, it's like we're not that, it's not that clear. Sometimes, you know, you can say, well, you're being, you're doing it for that reason or that reason. And frequently, I don't know why I'm, you know, I'm just, you know, sometimes I hate to tell the person, I don't care. like why I, it's like it didn't matter to me. So like, why do I care about my motivation when I don't care that much about what I'm doing? You know, because it wasn't important to me. Well, to someone else, it could be very important. And so they want to understand everything about it when it's just somebody made a choice.
Well, Peter.
Yeah.
I'm laughing because my first year here, my first work day, he assigned me to clean the toilet. And I said, oh, he doesn't like me. And then the second work day I came again, no, do the toilet upstairs. I'm really in the lower. He really doesn't like me. So it's all this opinion, you know. And then the third work day again, the toilet, like, okay, maybe there is a lesson here. Better toilet cleaner.
In truth, since I actually never had an aversion to toilet, I wouldn't even think, you know what I mean? It wouldn't cross my mind anybody would think about toilet, you know, it's like, but I know people, you know, do, and probably it's more like, you know, I couldn't give you a heavy job to do, you know what I mean? There are jobs you can physically do.
And then when I went to the Abbey for my first retreat, I was again assigned to the toilet. This is my karma.
Could be. You know, it's not, yeah, it's like, it's not, you know, it's just one of those things that just, you know, I can even remember somebody was just, you know, was coming through from the Abbey, I think Jukai or something, and spent the night here on his way elsewhere, and he's kind of upstairs in the bathroom. I remember the toilet clogged and it overflowed, so there's poop on the floor and all the rest, and this fellow was just completely grossed out. I mean, it just overwhelmed him, like, I can't deal. And I felt like saying, it's your poop. You know, it's like, like, it's just you. I mean, what's, like, I mean, it comes out of you. What's the big deal? But of course, it's, you know, we even have, I mean, it goes back to, I even like in some cultures where you can't use your left hand because that's the hand. In like a lot of Middle Eastern cultures, you wipe your bottom with your left hand. So you, that's the unclean hand. So, and just, you know, it's all, again, how you look at things. And due to karma, we all have different things. Well, frequently, you know, it's like, you know, just like at the Abbey sometimes, you know, I can remember where we'd met, you know, I'd mess something up and people would want, what's the teaching in that, you know, this, you know, went wrong in this way, and I go, I'm an idiot. You know, you know, it's like you're trying to get the meaning of the fact that, you know, it's just normal stuff. You know, I didn't know something, or somebody didn't know something. So, you know, it's like people would be sent to one place, and then they go, no, you're not supposed to be here. You go somewhere else. And they're kind of reading meaning into it, like, oh, we're giving them a teaching, like Zen books. Like, you know. And I kind of go, no, not really.
That reminds me of, I think it was you that said that you had a dog named I'm a Dog. At night at the Abbey, you'd go out and call I'm a Dog. The woman who was there for the first time thought it was like a Zen koan. I'm a Dog. I'm a Dog.
It would be, I'm a Dog, come. I'm a Dog, come. And the funny thing is, she was Swiss, so her English wasn't that good, wasn't great. And you hear things very literally when you're translating a foreign language. So I think I think everyone else kind of heard it as, because also his name, it was, you know, often it was just Ima, because his, even though his full name was I'm a Dog, and his brother was You're a Dog. And then it was Doglet. It was even Bitchlet. Remember, Master G, you had a sense of humor. She would give all the animals names. So I had I'm a Dog. And it, yeah, it was just, so I even remember telling her, you know, somebody said, you know, kind of told her, because I remember the woman quite well, and told her, his dog's I'm a Dog. And she looked at him, and it took a moment, and then she got this embarrassed laugh, of course. You know, it's kind of like doing it, but, you know, it isn't, you know, kind of, but going back to things, as long as we're rejecting things, and we have to be aware of that, develop a sensitivity, what are we rejecting? What are we pushing away or strongly grasping? Just try to see things for what they are, because that's where the contentment and the peace come out of. It's just seeing it for what it is. Yes, I like this. Great. That's nice. I don't like this. So what? If you have the choice, you do what you like and you don't like, the same way as, you know, if you can get more comfortable, you get more comfortable. But if you can't, you can't. You know, you just don't got to go, oh, that chair would be so much better than this chair, or that would be. And, you know, and part of it is, you know, it's almost like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree. The image is he's attacked by the forces of Mara, all his greeds, desires, wishes, wants, fears. And the Buddha's answer, what he said to all of us, is I know you. You know, we get to know what it is, you know, instead of seeing it as something frightening or something enticing. I know you. It's just, you know, just an attraction, just the body. You know, just like, you know, you think of, you know, something like, you know, and due to karma we have these attractions and these aversions. You know, it's just like, I was like the way karma, we had a cat at the Abbey when I, a long time ago, Muffin, who had some neurological conditions, so he had great difficulty moving. He was incredibly stiff. And he moved his limbs like this, that. Took him a long time to walk anywhere. But he would just look at this one female cat who, you know, even to humans, you could see that she was trying to be provocative, you know what I mean? She seemed to be a cat version of a sexy cat, you know what I mean? Cat. If I heard one monk saying, who was taking care of her, he was getting undressed and then suddenly she's looking at him and he got uncomfortable. But anyway, the cat, this muffin would look at her and he would just fall over. It was like a cartoon, you know, like, boom. This is just too much. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, you know, kind of cat karma, you know, it's like, what makes something like sexually enticing, you know, you realize, you know, it doesn't really make any sense when you start thinking of it logical. It's like, why do you care about this or that? Why is this even attractive or not attractive, or, you know, enticing or not enticing? You know, why do you care about, wow, they have, you know, a really symmetrical face or something, you know what I mean? You know, and all the rest, you know, like, why do you have an aversion, let's say, to a really large nose? You know, it's like, why do you care about a nose? But you can actually see due to karma, you know, somebody beautiful walks in the room, you know, your eyes just gravitate towards it. You know, it's kind of a natural, you know, due to karma. And that's just karma, you know. Even babies have that karma too. They'll respond to what somebody looks like, you know, at a very, very young age, you know, within, you know, almost as soon as their vision works, you know, brain can process what they're seeing. But, you know, so it's, you know, and the more we can welcome what's happening to us, the more we can see it, and in a way find the Buddha in it, find something deeply spiritual in what's going on, because it's that welcoming attitude that allows to our, what we encounter, that frees us, you know. Well, as long as we have that mind that's picking and choosing, we can't find that spiritual quality. What we're getting is picking and choosing. You know, it's why it's good just to meditate where you're not picking and choosing. You know, it's why it frees up the mind, it creates more space. Because a good part of the rest of the time, we're picking and choosing. I want to dwell on this, hold on to that, think about this, sort this, control this. A lot of our minds, how do I get my life in better, organized to fulfill more of my desires? Which is often what the mind's doing, isn't it? How do I kind of get more of the good stuff and less of the bad stuff, rather than realizing, how do we be free of stuff? And we do it in little ways, you know, not like there's any, you know, it's not like you're going to walk out of here and not have it. But the more you know Mara, the more you can see that there's nothing there.